There are times in our lives when we encounter what seems like impossible encounters or impossible situations. When we experience either those life events that cause us either extreme uncomfortableness, those surprises that are not so good, or those that are like, whoa, what just happened? So much so that our brains are unable to process what to do with the information, either what it is seeing or what it is hearing. So all the senses in our brains are firing at the same time. And it causes our brain to snap into a form of survival mode, a form of protection. And these survival modes have been studied since the early 1920s. And it's probably they've been happening since early war. So, yeah, way back then. And you might know them, you probably heard of them as the fight, flight, or freeze responses. The automatic reactions of the body to help us survive threatening or not so threatening situations by readying the body to fight or to flee or run away. And researchers have continually been studying them and expanding on them since then. And they've included the freezing or now also a fawn one. And I thought of an example of my kids when they were little, like toddlers, maybe their first birthday. And you might have experienced this with your own kids. When you sing happy birthday for the first time to them, and sometimes they cry. Like, I remember my son, like, probably startled him so much that he was crying when we sang happy birthday to him. And we're like, no, it's a good thing. And as the years go on, the reactions have changed. Hopefully, you don't have a kid cry when you sing happy birthday to him. So as these responses, as you learn how to adapt when you encounter a situation, each time you encounter that situation. So for example, when you, like for the birthday song, you don't always cry when people sing happy birthday. Or hopefully you don't want to cry when someone tells you good news, like, I'm getting married. You don't cry, hopefully, unless it's something bad. But like I said, each time you adapt. So instead of, with the fawn, they say, instead of the freezing or fighting or fleeing, the person is drawn to pleasing the person instead of to avoid the conflict or the uncomfortableness. So whichever response we might go with, each one helps us to process when we see or hear something. And those hints that our body or our brain is giving us when we don't know what to do with the information that we're given, which I find fascinating. And when it seems like the event or the encounter might never make sense to us, like when we are told for the first time that someone passed away and we just don't know how to respond, it's because our brain is creating a new pathway of understanding. And slowly and gradually, the clues begin to be revealed to help us to make sense with that. So with Peter, James, and John, the clues are being revealed to them, and they happen suddenly, and their reactions vary. Because if for you, if you were told by your friend or mentor, hey, come up to this mountain with me and join me up here because I have some things to tell you, and you go up with them, and all of a sudden, like, ta-da, this big, you know, this transfiguration story told by Mark, there's not much clues being revealed of what happened. And in other Gospels, you read, you know, with Matthew, there's lots of details being given. But with Mark, this is just kind of the bones of the story. Because for Mark, his focus is on the mission of Christ, of getting the story out to the communities of what happened, of God's glory being revealed through Christ, of Christ going into the communities. And that's okay, because that was what Mark's focus was on. And what was disclosed to the disciples in the story and what they saw on the mountaintop was terrifying to them. And what they saw before them and described in this translation was his clothes became shining, exceedingly white, his face shining like the sun. And it doesn't say that, like in Matthew, it says the disciples fell down in fear. And Mark, we don't get that. But can you imagine seeing what they saw? I'd fall down in fear. I'd hide my face from the brightness. And like I said, you can only imagine what your reaction would be when you saw your mentor transform in front of you. The brightness of the sun, all that was being revealed to them in that moment. And it speaks of who appeared during that revelation and the reactions. And it's like a disclaimer was needed and given, and it was given before they walked up. And they knew of the healing that would take place, of what they would witness, the sacrifices that would be required of them, and the hardships that they would see and hear. They knew that, like some part of their brain knew what would take place. However, for Peter, like one part of his brain understood that, of what was going to be foretold, of what was going to take place. And the other part of his brain didn't quite understand all of it yet. So Peter's response went automatically to building shrines, to hold this day of festivals on the mountain of what was seen and witnessed, that Moses and Elijah appeared, and it's going to be this great festival. We'll hold these festivals as memorials of what was allowed, of what was happening. And he wasn't allowing himself time to process. Rather, he was focusing on the irrelevant things instead of giving himself that time. He was skipping over things he didn't understand and going to the things that he understood. And there might be times that we have, when we have faced those unexpected circumstances, that we've jumped to things that we understood rather than giving ourselves those times to process. And in the book of Atomic Habits, which if you've never read it, I highly recommend reading it, by James Clear, that this progression that Peter is experiencing, is building or pulling from, is forming a habit. And when our brains can't process all of what we are seeing, we try to jump to a familiar or a conclusion without fully seeing all the clues. That's something that at one time brought us a comfort, that we try to go there automatically. And when we each encounter, when we come across something new, our brain is trying to rapidly process and analyze the situation and make sense of what we're seeing and hearing and making that jump to how we should act. And pulling from past circumstances that might be vaguely familiar to provide that comfort or that familiarity to that current situation of what we're facing. Plus, our brains are busy learning the most effective course of action that we should take. And we might not always respond the same way each time. We might not always freeze or fly away from the situation or fawn, or we might not always get that fight response that we want or we might need, or whatever one we might need at that moment. But the variation or sequence will vary. And for example, for Peter, before he can go any further, God interrupts and envelops Jesus and Moses and Elijah in a cloud. And he says, "This is my dearly beloved son. Listen to him." So God is coming into that moment and pausing the situation and imploring the disciples on that mountain to listen. And I don't know about you, but there are times in my life where I wish, and it'd be nice to be enveloped by a cloud, maybe not on I-5 when I'm driving, but you know, when I'm walking, or those moments where it'd just be nice to like have God just come around me and go, you need to pause. And be like, oh, okay, thanks. Thank you. I appreciate that. Where God can just come in those unexpected circumstances and just say, pause. To allow our brains to process or to catalog the events that have taken place, whether, like I said, joyous or those unexpected hard times, where we can just go, oh. And perhaps when we encounter those impossible or uncircumstances that we are trying to process, that's when God is calling us to pause and listen. Those moments that draw our attention away from our focus, from those pains or stress or something else, like the setting sun or that perfectly timed God moment where we get that phone call or the text from someone we haven't heard from that says, hey, I've been thinking about you. Those are those God moments where God is saying, pause. Those are those precious moments that are unexpected when God is telling us to pause. And for the disciples, it was a chance to not only take that time to process what they had seen, but to understand the impact of what going forward was going to mean for them. Of what they'd heard on that mountain, and when they walked off that mountain, what was going to take place. The hardships that they were going to face and encounter, and how they were going to have to be supportive of Christ, of what he was going to face. And it was just the pieces of time, those pieces of moments that they were experiencing. Those moments that the confusions of the fight, flight, or freeze, or fawn, the trying to compute of what was going on within them, and taking a moment to pause and allow God's love to just embrace us, to recognizing that the mystery had not been revealed, that our mystery that we might be going through has not all been revealed to us yet, and that sometimes we don't get the whole story revealed all at once. I mean, it'd be nice for our stress levels if we got the whole story, but sometimes we just don't, and I don't know why. I don't understand why we don't. But the thing to remember, and I'm going to probably say this a lot of times for us because I think we need a reminder a lot of times, is that we are God's beloved children with whom he's well pleased. So I want it to be on repeat for us each and every step of our lives, each and every step of our days, as we go through those unexpected circumstances that we face. So the question I want you to ask yourself this week is, what is God calling you to listen and see before all is being revealed? Amen.